Please take your seat so we can get started. Welcome to Lesson 4, where we learn more about the skeletal system. After completing this lesson, you should be able to define the word skeleton and name the four functions of the human skeleton. You should be able to name the layers and describe the basic structure of an individual bone. You should be able to name and describe the parts of an individual long bone and describe the periosteum and the blood supply of an individual bone. You'll be able to describe the development of an individual bone and name four types of bones by shape. I expect you to name and define the two major subdivisions of the skeleton. I want you to know how to describe the thoracic cage and the skull. You should be able to describe the general pattern of the bones of the upper and lower members. I want you to be able to describe a typical vertebra, name the regions of the vertebral column, and give the number of vertebrae in each region. You'll have the capability of describing the intervertebral discs and ligaments that hold the vertebrae together. We'll also talk about joints. You should be able to describe major categories used in the classification of joints. You should be able to name the major parts of a typical synovial joint and also name and describe classifications of synovial joints according to the kind of motion and the number of axes. The skeleton serves as a support or framework of the human body. It's a combination of bones joined together. The human skeleton has four major functions: support, protection, motion, and hematopoiesis. For bodily support, the skeletal system provides a framework for the human body. For protection, the skeleton protects certain soft structures within the human body. An example is the skull, which surrounds the brain. For motion, muscles are attached to and move the bones. Bones provide leverage for motion. And for formation of blood cells, also known as hematopoiesis, blood cells are manufactured in the red bone marrow, mainly found in flat bones. In this lesson, we study the skeletal system from four different viewpoints: tissues, individual organs, joints, and the skeleton as a whole. Since we've already discussed bone as a tissue in Lesson 2, I'm not going to dwell on this topic today. For bones as individual organs, we'll cover this momentarily. We'll cover the study of joints later in the session, and our last topic today will be a discussion of the human skeleton as a whole in terms of its major subdivisions. The body uses bony tissues to form an individual bone. First, there's the cortex. The cortex is the outer layer of an individual bone. It's made up of compact or dense bony tissue. Second, there's the medulla. The medulla is the central portion of the individual bone. It generally consists of cancellous or spongy bone tissue. In some bones, particularly long bones, the medulla may include a space without any bony tissue. This space is called the medullary or marrow cavity. The marrow serves as a filler of the inside of bones. There are two types of bone marrow, yellow and red. Yellow bone marrow is mostly fat tissue. Red bone marrow is the only site in adults for the formation of red blood cells, known as hematopoiesis. The shaft is the central portion of a long bone. Here the cortex is thickened as required by applied physical stresses. The ends of long bones are made up mainly of cancellous or spongy bone tissue. An articular cartilage covers each area where a bone contacts another bone. This articular cartilage is made up of hyaline cartilage tissue and provides a smooth surface for motions. The periosteum is a covering of the bone surface not covered by articular cartilage. Periosteum is well supplied with blood vessels and sensory-type nervous tissue. It has two layers, the innermost layer and the fibrous layer. The innermost layer, which lies against the outer surface of the bone, consists of bone-forming cells, also known as osteoblasts. This is the osteogenic or bone-forming layer. The outermost layer is a fibrous connective tissue layer. A system of blood vessels enters and spreads out through the periosteum. Additional blood vessels, called nutrient vessels, penetrate the cortex of the bone and spread out through the marrow. The passageways for penetration of these vessels are called the nutrient canals. The human skeleton is preformed in the early fetus, but the early form is not of bony material. There are two types of bones according to their preformed basis. There's membranous bones and cartilage bones. These are in the right location and have the general shape of the adult bones they will become later. The outer skull bones are an example of membranous bones. Osteoblasts invade a membrane to form a center of ossification for formation of bone. Bone-forming activity spreads out from this center until a full bone is formed. In the fetus, many bones, for example long bones, exist first as models formed of cartilage. Sesamoid bones are small masses of bone that develop in tendons at points where great forces are applied to the tendons. The most obvious and largest sesamoid bone is the patella or kneecap. An ossification center is a growing mass of actual bone within the preformed material. Initial bone formation involves destruction of the preforming material and replacement with bony tissue. In the development of the long bones, there are two types of ossification centers. There's the diaphyseal, which is in the shaft region, and there's the epiphyseal, which is in the ends. As a long bone grows in length, the preforming material grows faster than the ossification center can tear it down. Ultimately, with time, the preforming material is overcome and growth ceases. A bone grows wider through the activity of the osteogenic layer of the periosteum. Remember, the periosteum covers most of the outer surface of the bone. Bones of the skeleton can be grouped into four major types: long, short, flat, and irregular. Each type has a somewhat different construction pattern. A femur is an example of a long bone. The short bones, such as those of the wrist and feet, have a thin layer of compact bone surrounding an inner mass of spongy bone. An example of these would be carpal bones of the wrist. The flat bones are constructed with two plates of compact bone, which enclose between them a layer of spongy bone. The spongy bone is richly supplied with blood vessels and red marrow. An example of a flat bone is the cranial frontal bone. The irregular bones are those that are not long, short, or flat. In other words, everything else. An example of an irregular bone is a vertebra. A joint or articulation is the location where two or more bones meet. Joints are classified according to the kind of material holding the bones together and the relative freedom in kind of motion at the particular joint. Varying degrees of motion, from none to some, are possible in fibrous joints. An example of this type of joint would be the inferior tibiofibular joint. When the bones are held together by fibrous connective tissue, the joint is referred to as syndesmosis. Syn means together, and desmos means a fiber. So syndesmosis is when the bones are held together by fibrous connective tissue. A suture is when the bones are quite close together with a minimum amount of fibrous connective tissue. For example, the joints between the cranial bones are known as sutures. Should the bones be united by bony material, the joint is referred to as a synosteosis. An example is the frontal bone. The frontal bone of the skull is actually a bony fusion of two bones. Approximately 10% of the time, this fusion fails to take place. The original suture between the bones remains and is called a metopic suture. Syn again means together, osteo means bone, so synosteosis means bones together. Cartilaginous joints are also non-movable joints. A cartilage joint in which the bones are held together by hyaline cartilage is called a synchondrosis. An example is the epiphyseal plate. Syn means together, chondro means cartilage. A symphysis is a cartilaginous joint in which the bones are held together by a disc of fibrocartilage. An example of this would be the pubic symphysis. In the synovial type of joints, the bones move on one another so as to allow various motions of the body parts. The oval part of the name refers to the fact that the fluid substance seen in this type of joint appears to the old anatomist to be like raw egg. Ovum means egg. A typical synovial joint is one which has parts common to all of the synovial joints. It is not actually a specific synovial joint. It's a composite. It's illustrated in the figure, and the typical synovial joint has bones, articular cartilages, synovial membrane, space, and fluid. It has a capsule, ligaments, and muscle. Bones are the levers of motion. They are the site of attachment for skeletal muscles. The contact points of the bones are usually covered with a layer of lubricated cartilage. Where these cartilages end, the synovial membrane begins. Cartilages provide a smooth surface to reduce friction. The synovial membrane lines the inner surface of the capsule. It secretes synovial fluid into the synovial space. The drawing exaggerates the amount of space between the bones. The space within the capsule allows movement. Synovial fluid is a colorless, viscous fluid similar in consistency to raw egg white. It lubricates the articulation. The typical synovial articulation is surrounded by a sleeve of dense fibrous connective tissue known as the capsule. The capsule encloses the articulation. Primarily, ligaments hold the bones together. Ligaments also may help restrain motion in certain directions and stabilize the articulation. Skeletal muscles apply the forces to produce a given motion. Synovial joints are further classified according to the kind of motion and the number of axes the motions used. In uniaxial synovial joints, motion occurs in only one plane. The joints of the fingers, the interphalangeal joints, flex and extend in the sagittal plane. These are commonly referred to as hinge joints. If a single rotary or rotational motion occurs around a post-like structure, the joint is a pivot joint. The atlas vertebra rotating around the dens, which is a tooth-like projection, of the axis vertebra at the top of the neck or the base of the skull, is a pivot joint. In biaxial synovial joints, motion between the bones occurs in two planes. Here, the surface in contact is curved or rounded in two directions. The proximal phalanx of the finger can flex and extend and move from side to side on the rounded head of the metacarpal bone. This is the MP, or metacarpophalangeal joint. When the two surfaces are curved in directions at right angles to each other, a shape similar to that of a cowboy's saddle is formed. This type of synovial joint is called a saddle joint. In the human body, the saddle joint is located at the base of the thumb. In multiaxial joints, motion is possible in all three planes of space. The ball and socket type synovial joint has the freest motion in all directions. A spherically rounded head fits into a receiving concavity. The head is called the ball, the concavity is called the socket. The hip joint is an example of the ball and socket type, with the spherical head of the femur fitting into the cup or socket of the pelvic bone. In the plane joint, contact surfaces of the bones are essentially flat. These flat surfaces slide on one another. This is also called translatory motion. The acromioclavicular joint of the shoulder region is another example of a plane joint. In three of the synovial joints of the human body, a special addition is seen. This addition is known as an articular disc. The joints with articular discs are the temporomandibular joint of the lower jaw, the sternoclavicular joint at the sternum or the breastbone, and the ulnocarpal joint of the distal end of the forearm. An articular disc is a fibrocartilage plate. It's inserted between the articular surfaces of the bones as a synovial joint. In this way, it divides the synovial space into two spaces. Joints having an articular disc are capable of having several different motions occurring at the same time. Mechanically, there are really two joints there. The human skeleton is a collection of individual bones articulated or joined together. The major subdivisions of the skeleton are the axial skeleton and the appendicular skeleton. The axial skeleton is the central framework of the human body. It includes the skull, the vertebral column, and the thoracic cage. The vertebral column, or spine, is made up of a vertical series of bony blocks called vertebrae. These vertebrae are joined together in such a way as to form a semi-flexible rod. The spine is the center support for the trunk, yet allows trunk movements. Anatomically and functionally, a typical vertebra is constructed of two major parts. The vertebral body is a drum-shaped cylindrical mass. Its superior and inferior surfaces are flat. Its function is primarily weight-bearing. The neural arch extends posteriorly, arching over and protecting the spinal cord of the central nervous system. From the neural arch are several processes. These processes serve as attachment areas for the trunk muscles. They also act as levers during various trunk motions. The vertebral column has 32 to 33 vertebrae, one on top of the other. These vertebrae are arranged in five regions: cervical, thoracic, lumbar, sacral, and the coccyx. The vertebrae of each region have a characteristic shape. In the cervical region, there are 7 cervical vertebrae. In the thoracic region, there are 12 thoracic vertebrae. In the lumbar region, there are 5 lumbar vertebrae. And the sacrum is a bony fusion of 5 sacral vertebrae. The coccyx has 3 to 4 coccygeal vertebrae altogether. The vertebrae are held together in two ways. The intervertebral disc holds the bodies of adjacent vertebrae together. The intervertebral disc is a fibrous ring with a soft center. This disc allows the vertebral bodies to move on one another. This joint between the vertebral bodies is a plane-type joint. The various parts of adjacent vertebrae are held together by ligaments. A ligament is a dense fiber.